Here, so go ahead, Jocelyn. I saw your hand.
Sure, I'm Jocelyn Hughes. I think I'm at our February meeting. It was so long ago. I think I was elected the vice chair of the UAB, and I'm a utility lawyer, and I guess I'll also introduce Theodore and Evelyn. Probably see and hear them too, and I'll go back on mute so they're not too disruptive.
Okay, thank you. Nice to meet you. Okay, go ahead, Ed.
Hi, Ed Keon Jr. I was on the board. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
They're on the board right from the beginning. I was thinking of writing a book or a movie about this, but there's no interest apparently. Just the fact I've been here and seen quite a few things. And then when a little bit later on, I'll give you a little bit of a background to how we got here. So nice to see a lot of new faces.
Okay, and then we'll go to Jeremy.
Yeah, Jeremy Rodriguez, resident of West Lynn for the past 3 years. Just want to get more involved. I believe I'm the newest member of this, or newest participant of this group. Happy to be here.
Okay, and I see a Washington State University diploma back there, so.
Yeah, my MBA is from Washington State.
Cool, okay. Next up is Bruce.
Yes, my name is Bruce Keeling. Hi, good evening to you all. I joined this about, January time, and was in the February meeting, but I'm fairly new, so I'm excited about doing whatever I can to be a part of this and make this work. I moved here about 2 years ago from Micronesia. So I'm excited. I'm excited about this. Thank you.
Well, welcome. Okay. And I kind of lost my people here. I'm missing somebody. Let's see, Anthony. Anthony, there you are. Okay.
I'm Anthony Larson, lifetime Westland resident. Just wanted to get more involved in my community. So it's good to see everybody.
And you're on the UAB too. I forgot to mention, we're on the UAB. Yeah.
Yes.
For the record. Okay. Is there anybody on the UAB that I missed here? Okay. And would everybody else like to introduce themselves then? I notice we have about four other people here, so go ahead. Starting with Richard. Okay.
Well, good evening, folks. Thank you for volunteering your time. As one of your city councilors, I especially appreciate all you volunteers who really help us run the city, and we rely on you folks. So I think we have a great volunteer group. So I'm your city council liaison, and I have been for a good while on the UAB. So welcome, nice to work with you. I'm basically sitting in the background. I don't have any voting rights or anything. I'm just here to be a conduit to council if necessary. So thank you all.
Okay. And next is Amy.
I'm Amy Pepper. I am the staff liaison to this board. I'm a senior project engineer in the engineering department for the city.
Okay, and I see we have Lance here too. Hi, Lance. Go ahead.
Hi, Lance Calvert. I'm the public works director and city engineer, and nice to see everybody.
All right, great. Okay, I guess the first item on the agenda here is go ahead.
I just want to advise you folks, I've been, as part of the council, I've been on the South Fork Water Board now for my entire run on council, which is almost 4 years, since it is related to our utility advisory board. Just an FYI.
Great, okay.
And I didn't introduce myself. I'm Lauren Greyhouse. It's okay, I'm Lauren Greyhouse. I'm the finance director here at the City of West Lynn.
And we're really glad you're here tonight, by the way.
I'm so sorry.
Okay.
No worries.
Okay, so the first item on the agenda is summary notes from February 11th. And does anybody have any additions or subtractions to the February 11th meeting notes? Well, seeing as there's nobody suggesting anything, I do have a couple of things to just minor typo things here. Under number one, call to order introduction, I called it to order, J-O-N, John Miller, not Bill Frazier. He was the past chair. And my name was misspelled a couple of times, J-O-N, basically. So those are the only things that I could add to it. And that would be under business A, sub little a, and other business number five. Does anybody else have any additional additions or subtractions to the meeting notes, the summary notes? Okay, do I hear a motion to accept the Tuesday, February 11th notes?
So moved. Yeah.
Okay, Ed's made a motion to approve them. Is there a second?
This is Jocelyn seconding.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of approving the summary notes with the added, the minor typos, say aye.
Aye.
I guess we'll vote on that, shouldn't we? Hold on. How about, let's just do an audio, okay? I don't want to get dragged down into that. So everybody in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, it passes unanimously. And the next item on the agenda I wanted to talk about perhaps how we can narrow our focus here tonight. One of the things I'd like to look at tonight is discussing the 5% or the rate that we suggest that the city we recommend to the city council to approve. And so that's what I see as our basic goal tonight, is to listen in terms, not to pass, but to just listen to the financial presentation by Lauren, and perhaps come next month and discuss and see where we're at in terms of the 5% rate increase, or whatever rate increase we suggest or want to suggest to the council. One of the traditions that UAB has had is we try to keep it a 60-minute meeting, and I'll try to get to 50 minutes next month, okay? So we'll do that. The next item on the agenda then is Ed. I'm going to switch Ed in front of, I've lost my meeting here a second here. Okay. Instead of the financial presentation first, I thought that we could have Ed Kianjian, who was here back in 1994 when the UAB came into existence, became a part of the charter. Sections 44 and 45. He's been here since the inception, and Ed is a lawyer, former lawyer, I don't know, a retired lawyer, I suppose. And so, Ed, I'm going to turn it over to you in terms of kind of a historical presentation to us about what the UAB is, okay?
Okay, that's John. Can you hear me okay, everybody?
Yes. Hi.
This whole business started about this particular advisory board started with a very effective grassroots movement back 20 plus years ago of some citizens who were not wanted to know how it was that we had these rate increases that were not regular. Sometimes they were bigger and sometimes lower. And basically, they were concerned that we were raising the rates too high. Didn't need to do this, and they came to the city really say we got a lot of data to prove otherwise. So as a result of this movement, this advisory advisory committee was set up of various citizens. I think about 12, 13 people, maybe even more than that, to look at the data and then talk and make some decisions about where we go or how we get the community more involved with this whole process. But we spent a lot of time and went into all kinds of things, several months of meetings, sometimes every week, looking at a lot of data. And at that point, we weren't just looking at a figure like 5% or anything, it's just simply at the process. Anyway, what came out of that was this advisory committee. Again, some of the people had been involved with this larger group, you know, and a couple others had been already involved, Salesforce, so I had been also. And they were tasked, weren't sure we're going to be doing these tax workers. We talked about not just water, but sewage and electricity and system development and budgets, a lot of things. So it came out and was the Section 44 of his voter approval of utility rates. And we were, I'm not sure at what point the 5% kicked in. Obviously, it's already in the charter. And it had the, you all had the chance to read this, essentially, we were tasked to look at what we wanted to do, and if we wanted to get more than 5%, then make a presentation to the city council. Anyway, so this, we started working on that, and there was kind of a sense that we were also wanted to really, or should have been really involved in more than just getting over the whatever the, you know, whatever the proposal of the city was. And that's why the name was changed, not just to a water board, but a utility. But that was less kind of vague, except that we had a lot of conversation about every utility you could think of, even thinking about the new cable systems possibly coming in, electricity, sewage, what have you. What came out was this fairly narrow definition. And so for the next few years, we kind of worked with this. We got very good representations from the city, from the experts. We questioned them, and we basically went along with things. Somewhere about midway of this life of this group, became more active in the sense we wanted to get more involved and start digging a little bit deeper into some of the data. And also, in conjunction with the cooperation of the city council, we became kind of an arm once the decision was made to go out to the neighborhoods. We even made presentations at neighborhood associations and so on. And we were just more proactive about how we got there and how we wanted to explain to the water system, the people who really know, you know, 99% when they figure just turn the water on and off and it's like magic, you know, they never really had an idea how or what all these things are interrelated. Later on, there was a lot of pushback from the city council, different administrations, thought we were going a little too far and really needed to stick strictly to the 5% or more or else, you know, and that's it. And so we kind of offered a little, more dormant period, but we still looked at things and we still questioned the city and made recommendations, none of them really stuck out. We did emphasize the fact that the 5%, we kept hammering on the fact that really wasn't quite good because you need a lot of things, that some capital improvements, and there's a gray area between small capital improvements and larger ones and bonds and so on. And that pretty much is the way this thing is run. It's about this for we did get back to the city. We got up of the city. For a while there, and editorials and the Westland Tidings and so on, positions we took. But we were just basically an overseer of the whole process. I think for us now to wrap this up, it's, we need to perhaps discuss, maybe not at this meeting particularly, how we see our role, really, because we don't want it to be just simply rubber stamp things. That's what it looked like we did. You know, we did spend time with experts in the city with Lance and all the people, you know, all that. So what role do we want and how do we want to expand it? So that's where we are. It's been it's been interesting, active, and we have to a certain point, and certainly did give credence to the idea that, you know, people need to know a little more about the war. And I think over the 20 years they did it as opposed to before. So that's it, John.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ed. And I think those are some pretty good points that we can look at down the road. But this year has been a very unique year in terms of COVID and lack of meetings and stuff. So as I said at the beginning, hopefully we can focus on suggesting or approving or making a suggestion to the city council as to what the new rate would be on January the 1st. Water rates basically are adjusted on January the 1st and up to a maximum of 5%. So with that, I'd like to move on to Lauren and her presentation of the finance report. So Lauren, are you there?
I am here. Amy, was this presentation posted on the website or is it still, or are you able to screen share it and bring it up, Amy? Yeah.
I can screen share it for you if you would like. It was also emailed out, so I will screen share it.
Okay, so there's a couple documents that it sounds like Amy sent out. The first one is I just basically took the utility chart in our master fees and charges and took everything out except for the water rates, just to show where our water rates are compared to other cities. Actually, it shows that we're the lowest by far. We're at about $33.43 for water per month. Obviously, this is not an exact science because water rates fluctuate based off of the amount of usage. So we just try to make it all comparable across all boards for the best, like for a point in time. And the next lowest is Tualatin at $39.37. So about a $4 difference there. Like I said, there's a little paragraph that kind of explains these, but it just kind of shows where we're at in comparison to other cities. The next one that we have in here is just a brief history of the South Fork Water Board rate increases, usage, and the cost that we spend on water. It's just showing that, you know, the water rates continue to go up. That we are receiving. The amount of water has been going up except for last year we had a dip, likely just due to the weather. And so then it shows the cost breakdown and that the cost is continuing to go up minus last year because we purchased less water. So that's all pretty simple. Is there any questions on any of that information? I'll head into the 20-year forecast then. So the first forecast that you see is a water fund projection for 20 years with a 5% increase, which is what we have in our charter that we're allowed to do. And basically what this is showing is we put in here just the number of projects that we would be able to fund with that 5% increase, which over the 20 years, capital projects are about 48,870, or 48 million, 48.8 or 0.9 million, let's call it. And that's what we would be able to fund if we continue at the 5% rate. Up above, you'll see the resources, basically pretty simple here. The resources, so the revenues are water charges, interest that we receive, and miscellaneous, which is our water tower rent that we receive for renting out the tops of our water towers. Down to the expense side, it's also fairly simple. Personnel services, that's employees who work in the water department, get charged directly to the water department. Materials and services, a majority of that is our cost of purchasing water and other items like that. Debt service, which won't change, that is set in stone. That's for full faith and credit bonds. And transfers to other funds, that's also something that we can't control. That's our transfers to the general fund for overhead costs such as IT, finance, HR. It's a cost allocation plan that we use across the city, and so it's a full costing method. Then we get into the capital projects, and I'll let Lance take over on the capital projects, just because he has more information and was the one who, you know, set these up. So Lance, I'll let you take it away.
Thank you, Lauren. One thing that wasn't mentioned earlier, we share our source water with Warrenton City, and that's through the South Fork Water Board. As Councillor Saglick mentioned, he sits on the South Fork Board. South Fork is co-owned between West Lynn and Oregon City. And we share that resource, and we get all of our water from that source. South Fork really shows up in this budget under materials and services, where we're paying a wholesale rate for the water that we receive from South Fork. One thing I was going to mention, prior slide on the rates, you'll also note that the City of West Lynn's water rate is over 30% less per month than Oregon City's water rate. Even though we share the same source, we have very similar systems, West Lynn's rate is considerably lower than the adjoining Oregon City rate. So going back to our capital projects, what you see here listed in sort of that big red box is what we project out over the next 20 years of water capital projects. Obviously, the outer years become more far-reaching and less known. The closer years are years that we have a better understanding of where our capital needs are. In general, you'll see in the past years, expenditures dominated by the Bolton Reservoir replacement project. That was the large reservoir that was recently replaced over on Skyline Drive, close to the high school. That is really the hub of our entire water system outside of the South Fork plant. And in future years, you'll see capital outlays in particular focused on Highway 43, as well as the I-205 widening project. Typically, we do try and spend a majority of our capital on waterline replacements. That's historically where we spend and where we forecast in the future most of our capital expenditures go, which is really just replacing old water lines. We have probably, I want to say, about 119 miles of water line in the city. If you capitalize that out, basically we should be replacing right now at least around $1 million a year, every year, in water lines to keep up with the age of that infrastructure. We historically have not spent that amount, and we are not projecting spending that amount until the very outer years of this 20-year projection because of demands in other areas and the lack of capital for the overall system. Basically, when you see somebody with a really low water rate, probably what's happening is they're deferring capital expenditures, which is pretty much what the city of West Lynn has historically done. What you see in our future capital planning here is some basic waterline replacements as well as the major projects. What I have done is had Lauren forecast the I-205 waterline project as financed over 10 years. We do not have enough money in the water fund to absorb that expensive of a project in a single year or even under 2 years. We would have to finance the size and scope and scale of that project. That project is the relocation of the city's main water supply reconstruction of the I-205 Abernathy Bridge. Our 24-inch main water pipe that supplies all of the city of West Lynn is attached to the bridge deck of I-205. It's underneath the bridge. That line will have to be moved, relocated, or replaced with the widening of I-205. Under the city's current agreement with ODOT, the city is fully on the hook for the cost of all of that utility work. It is typical in most utilities relative to transportation projects that the utility pays for the utility. So since that work is pending, I don't anticipate the I-205 work really starting soon, but we do show it in our capital projection. And I'm guessing that the I-205 work will probably realistically start with design of the water main replacement in 2024, probably start construction in 2025 or 2026. That is a big chunk of capital that is not really identified in our water master plan or in our capital plans of the past, because that's a new project to us. And if you look at our water line there, if you actually look at I-205, there's two bridge decks. There's one for northbound and one for southbound. And our water line actually hangs on both bridge decks between the two decks. So it's sort of teeter-totters. And when ODOT widens I-205, they will actually roll the existing decks apart and build additions onto each side of the existing decks to carry the additional through lane of traffic. When they do that, obviously our bridge deck has to go, our water line can't just span between both bridge decks anymore. We'll have to shift to one deck and then build a separate system, because we can't go without water for the length of time that's being built there. So in effect, what we're really doing is replacing the existing crossing along that route. So that's why that cost is so high. The other big project is really just more water main replacements, particularly along Highway 43. As those improvements proceed, we'll want to get in there and do the water line work. Most of Highway 43's water lines are all asbestos cement lines. Asbestos cement was a popular water line material back in the late 60s, and the city used it, and in particular the Robinwood system that the city acquired used it almost exclusively in the Robinwood area. But it obviously, anything with asbestos fell out of favor in the early 70s when we realized that asbestos is not good for your lungs. It's perfectly fine for a waterline material. You just don't want to cut into it and fry it or fray it into an airborne particulate. So we don't use that anymore. The problem with asbestos cement pipe is that it doesn't last very long. It was cheap at the time it was made, which is why it was probably a popular waterline material at the time. But it only lasts about 40 to 50 years, and then it starts to slowly degrade, almost like an eggshell, and it becomes very fractional. It can fracture quite easily. Becomes very brittle. Most of those old lines are unfortunately 40, 50 plus years old, and so they need to be replaced, because when we do road work on top of asbestos cement pipe, just the vibration of the road improvements can destroy the water line in the process of rebuilding a road. So you'll see that most of our water main replacements are usually where we're doing road work. If you see a lot of poor condition streets, it's probably very tied to the underlying condition of the water line. We typically will not be able to do a lot of road work until we can get the water lines replaced or fixed, in particularly those areas with either galvanized or asbestos cement pipe. So if anybody asks you, why isn't my road done, or why is my road in such poor shape, it's probably because the water line is in such poor shape underneath the road. So that being said, you also see in that capital equipment replacement list some additional work relative to our reservoirs, reservoir maintenance, some master planning work. We're actually due for a master plan update. Our 2008 master plan is pretty dated, particularly with the update of the Bolton Reservoir. So we'll be working on updating our master plan here in this budget cycle. Also included in that list of capital items is work on pressure reducing valves, seismic repair or seismic improvements, and SCADA and telemetry, which is how we communicate with our systems. The pressure reducing valves is in this exercise, we only showed over a few years, and that's actually an ongoing cost. Same thing with SCADA, we're showing sort of it's spread out. Reality is we probably do that in chunks, but for the purposes of the projection, it sort of gives you a approximation of future years as the years go out. Now this setup that we're showing here is really what we can do, assuming that we take care of these target high priority projects and try and keep the fund from going negative. The problem in the water fund is that it really takes a lot of capital to build these improvements, so we try and do them in stages. So typically, like I try not to do like $100,000 water projects, because those are just too small and we won't get good bids. What we'll try and do is pair those with other bigger projects to get better bids and better costs. Optimally, like I said, we'd be doing $1 million a year just in water main replacements. But this projection shows what we can do with the standard 5% rate increase and keep from going negative in the fund balance. Obviously, this is not everything we want to do. This does not include most of what's included in our water master plan. Lauren and I were looking today with Amy at some future projections of sort of all in pricing if we were to do everything in our water master plan. And to do that, you would definitively have to and maintain our piping infrastructure in a reasonable way. To do all that, you would definitely have to have rate increases above 5%. A few years ago, the UAB did look at potentially taking to the voters a rate increase over 5%. That was, I think it was actually recommended to the council at the time. The council did not push that forward at the time to the voters because there was a lot of confusion in the water system about the Lake Oswego Tiger plant and its relevance to the city of West Linn system and how that all worked. So that was, there was, I think, also another thing on the ballot at the time. So we've been sort of in this mode of doing 5% rate increases. And you're, you know, Ed and John, who've been on the UAB a long time, certainly know this. But not really pursuing the time and the effort and the cost associated with a campaign to raise water rates. Water rate increases are traditionally not very popular, obviously, for obvious reasons. People don't understand the complexity of the water system and costs over time, costs of capital over time. So really, and it gets into a whole bunch of politics of how to best approach a rate increase above that would need voter approval, polling, and what that would look like, a campaign about educating voters on why it would be a good thing to raise rates above 5%. There's a lot that goes into it, and, you know, with all the sort of turmoil in the world right now, it just it has not been a really great time. I don't know if there ever is a great time to do a significant rate increase, but certainly in the last recent history, there hasn't been a great opportunity to really have that conversation with the public. With that, I don't know if there's anything else Lauren wanted to add or Ian wanted to add, but I'll turn it back over to Lauren at this point unless somebody has specific questions about capital projects.
Yeah, the only thing that I would add is that, as Lance said, you know, this first spreadsheet shows what the projects we would do with the 5% increase, and that was about $48.9 million. And then if you go to the next page, it shows what we would do if we had, if we wanted to fully fund all of our projects, and that would be about $59.1 million. So a pretty big jump there. Of what we would do, how much water line replacement we need. It's not in the first projection that we would be able to do with the 5% increase. If we were to do all those projects and kept the 5% increase, we would go negative in our reserves in fiscal year 23, so basically in 2 years, and that's what this second spreadsheet is showing. And then the third spreadsheet, obviously, is if all the projects are fully funded, how much we would have to raise rates. And down at the bottom, it's basically showing that starting next year, we would go from 5%, we'd have to raise 13%, 13%, 13%, and then 8% to keep us out of the negative. So we're not saying that that's a recommendation at this point. As Lance said, with everything going on right now, you know, it's a lot about timing, but I think one of the common misconceptions is people see, oh, we have 3.3 million fund balance in the water fund, you know, that's great, we have plenty of money, we don't need to do the 5% increase. And what it's really showing is that we have a lot of deferred maintenance, we have a lot of maintenance that we're not doing currently. And the 5%, if we did do all of the things that we should be doing, we wouldn't keep up, and we would be going negative in a few years here. So I just want to make that clear and make sure that, you know, if there's any questions on that, you let me know, or let Lance know. But does that make sense to everyone? Are there any questions on that?
I do have a question. So it sounds like if it would go negative in 2023 and we aren't expecting the I-205 relocation to start until later, that it's not really the sole driver for needing the rate increase.
No, not necessarily. You know,
it's looking more, I think, like the highway 43 improvements. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also just changing those water line replacements from, you know, 500 $500,000 a year to the actual million that we need to be doing a year each year to keep up with it.
That's primarily residential waterline replacements. The only, I guess, bright spot, if there is one, is we do have water SDC revenue from new development. So new development pays a chunk of cash to the water fund to help support improvements to the water system that would support new development. So things like system expansions or system capacity improvements would be eligible for some of those SDC funds. Simply replacing an old water line in an existing residential neighborhood with a new water line doesn't, you know, that's not SDC eligible. But if we, like on Highway 43, replace a four or six inch water line with a new 12 inch water line, then the difference in that size adds capacity for future development based on our master planning. And so that project would be eligible for some SDC expenditures. Now that's capped and limited, and we can only spend SDC revenue that we have on hand from new construction, and most of our SDC funds went into the Bolton Reservoir project when that was built. So we don't have a lot of SDC currently, but as new development comes online, they will help fund some of those improvements. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of new development land available in the city of Westland. So our SDC revenues tend to diminish over time.
And have we updated the SDC charges recently? Or has that been held constant?
You want to take that, Lauren, or you want me to?
You can go ahead.
Yeah, so our SDC charges are based on our master plan, the 08 master plan. And there's a formulaic approach to that that's governed by state statute. We have a consultant that helps with that. FCS typically helps with those. But every year they adjust up based on a inflationary factor that is the West Coast Inflation Index rate. So every year those SDCs go up a little bit. Obviously, when we update the master plan, there'll be a new list of capital projects, a new list of needs of the system, and then we will update the SDCs based on the new master plan. Those SDC rates could go up or down depending on outcomes of the master plan, as well as where the council would like to be in relationship to charging new development. Typically in Westland, we work to maximize the amount that we receive from new development. There's been some sort of pushback a little bit on that philosophy in the development community, particularly when it comes to equity and inclusivity and affordable cost of living. So I'm sure that would be a subject that would be tackled in the future as those discussions come up maybe in the next couple years.
And I have a follow-up question on the water line replacements as well, as far as increasing the budget for that from about $500,000 to $1 million. As far as the water line replacements and deferred maintenance, I mean, would you say that we're catching some of those problems before they're problems and it's more proactive, or is it more like responding to failures in the system?
As of right now, no. Everything we do is responding to failure.
Okay.
So there is no proactive except for The work that was, like I said, done in particular with the Bolton Reservoir, which, by the way, was actually also near failure. We pretty much, in most communities, I think, pretty much squeeze every drop they can out of that infrastructure.
Okay. Does somebody else have a question? Go ahead. Let's see who. Raise your hand, I guess. Let's see.
I just got a little bit follow up kind of on what Jocelyn was talking about. Now, when Lauren was going over the all of the capital projects, those capital projects don't include normal preventative maintenance, correct?
So the first spreadsheet doesn't. So that's the first spreadsheet, and what we would do if we continue with just the 5% rates to make sure that we don't go negative. That's the first spreadsheet. The next two are showing if we did all that preventative maintenance that we should do. And that's why with the second one, it's showing, oh, if we did that and we didn't raise the rates more than 5%, then we would go negative in 2 years from now. And then the third one is showing if we did all those projects and we didn't want to go negative, how much we would need to raise the rates each year.
Gotcha.
And obviously, you know, I spread that across, you know, a few years, but it could be done a variety of different ways. I mean, it could be 20% increases back to back, or it could be, you know, it could be a variety of different ways. I kind of spread it across the 4 years so that kind of balanced out, but like I said, that could be changed. It's just a quick estimate.
Okay. Does someone else have a question? Okay, I have a question then. For I don't know who to address this to, but since we've had COVID, how have the customers been impacted? I know there's a low-income utility assistance program application. Have you seen any increases in terms of people who aren't able to pay, an increase in number of applications? How has COVID affected revenue flow, I guess, the funding mechanism here for water rates?
So I can help answer that.
Okay.
Obviously, this is not something that there's an exact science to, but yes, we have received, you know, some calls of people who are struggling because of COVID. We stopped shutoffs at the beginning of COVID, so we have not been doing water shutoffs. Our department in finance has really struggled with that. We've always been really good with working with customers if they have financial difficulties to make payment arrangements or to get them on low-income assistance, or to even, we have an emergency assistance write-off program that we can use in situations like COVID or someone's ill or if someone lost their job. So our department has struggled a little bit with that because we saw an increase in the number of people on the shutoff listing. Not that they were going to be shut off, but we still run the delinquent listing. There was quite an increase in that delinquent listing. And a lot of the people just won't even reach out to us. It's been more of, we've been sending door hangers like, hey, please call the city, we'll work out arrangements with you, and we get nothing back. And even on some of them, there have been people who have moved in February or March, and they're here for, you know, 6 months, and then they move out with a bill, and they've never once paid a bill. And so we have quite a few of those people because there's no repercussions. There's no reason for them to pay a bill, and then, of course, we're going to send them to collections eventually, and it just goes down that rabbit hole, and we don't know. Hopefully we'll see money eventually for that. It hasn't been significant that we've heard a ton of people saying, I can't pay because of COVID, but you know, there are those people. So we discussed this at council a few weeks ago and decided that November, mid-November, we're going to start shutoffs again. But with that being said, and start charging interest again. But with that being said, we are going to work with everyone as we've always done, but obviously more so. We have a utility emergency assistance allowance that we basically never use the full amount. We have $5,000 a year. We don't generally use the full amount. If we need to use the full amount this year, that's fine. And if we need more, we will take that back to council and hopefully get more money from council, you know, in the budget for emergency assistance. So just because we don't want to see this continuing trend of if there are people taking advantage of this, I'm not saying that everyone is. I know that there's definitely people out there who need this and who can't pay their water bills or can't pay their utility bills. But we also, if there's those people, as long as they reach out to us and we can make some kind of arrangement. I mean, even last week, you know, I spoke with a woman who, you know, she can only pay once a month and she can only pay a very small portion. And we're working with her for that, you know, and we write off additional portions or whatever we need to do to make that whole. But, you know, we don't want the other group taking advantage of it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. Does somebody else have a question they want to direct to Lauren or Calvin? Okay. Am I hearing nobody there? Okay.
I guess I have one more question with respect to the 205 project. I think from prior meetings we've heard a variety of figures as far as a budget estimate for that project, and I realize it's still pretty far out in the future. I was just curious as to, like, what's our level of detail or certainty around the current budgeting there?
Sure. So, like I said, it has not been a detailed design or anything of that nature. What we're really just doing is taking unit costs from similar constructs of working over or even possibly under the water. When you're working in that environment, it's not, you know, obviously the same as working in a residential street at grade. But we do have our cost estimates that are based on, like I said, the length of the replacement that's needed multiplied by the cost per linear foot that we see on similar style projects in the Portland and Seattle metro areas. So those are the numbers that we're using right now for budgeting purposes. And then I also included in there, in that you add up all those years, the cost of financing that over that term of 10 years. I really didn't think we could shorten it any shorter than that and maintain our water rates at the 5% max. But obviously that's subject to change. If projects come in cheaper, great, you know, then all good. If the project comes in more than that, then, you know, then it's a timeout, and you know, how are we going to make that, close that gap? So that in general, a lot of fine tuning still on that to get a really detailed cost estimate.
Okay. Does anybody else have something they'd like to ask here? We're closing in on 7 o'clock, but all I have is Lance up here in my big screen right now, so I'm trying to figure out how to get out of that. But so does, one thing I'm noticing here is that I would really like to have Lauren or Lance or whoever at our next meeting. And is that a possibility for November? The November 10th, I believe, is the date. because I really need to look at those spreadsheets like one at a time. You know, it's difficult to look at them on the big screen here. I do have them, but would that be possible? So, Lauren, or?
Sure. If you also on WebEx, if you go up in the upper sort of right hand corner, you should be able to click on like the grid view or active speaker view or video view. Grid view is what I use. It's the Brady Bunch. I call it the Brady Bunch view.
Yeah.
That so you don't just see the active speaker up there in big, you know, picture in your face. For technical help, hopefully. I am certainly available for any of the future UAB meetings and can assist in any kind of questions. Of course, Amy is a key component of our staff here on the engineering side of things. So on the expenditure sides, that's really where Amy and my expertise are. On the revenue side is really where Lauren's expertise lies.
Right.
Okay.
I'm also available if needed.
Okay.
I think one of the next steps, and I think generally the UAB does make a recommendation. I know it's on your goals. I don't know if you plan on doing that tonight or at the next meeting. Obviously, you might want to look over it, like you said, and do that at the next meeting, but make a recommendation to the council on if to continue to raise the rates next year, the 5% or a lesser percent or a 30%. For a vote, for a greater percentage.
Yeah, the maximum of 5% recommendation without a vote, basically, from the people. I'd like to really schedule, well, how about, what do other people feel? Do you feel like you'd like to hear from Lauren and I'm sorry I called you Calvin, Lance.
Oh, God. It's okay.
Oh, okay. Okay. Lance, what do the rest of you guys feel like? Would you like to hear from them as well next month?
Well, I mean, I know that it was a long time ago, but when we met back in, oh, I don't even know, February.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of talked about the prospectus of this 5% and that it was not going to be really sustainable for the foreseeable future. Me personally, I having the lowest rates around, you know, for the, I think the size of our city and, you know, how new a lot of the city is, I think it's pretty ridiculous we've been so low for so long. And, you know, like Lance said, we've got a lot of improvements we need to be doing that we're not doing. And eventually our pretty new city will be, you know, falling apart and causing issues other places with street maintenance and stuff like that, and sucking up a lot of funds that we just won't have. It's my recommendation that we you know, go to council with, you know, we got to raise higher than 5%, and we kind of have missed the bus on doing it sooner. We kind of just need to do it now.
And if I could respond and maybe ask a follow-up question there, I think I had understood, I think from Lance's discussion, that there needs to be a bit more groundwork done as far as winning the hearts and minds of Westland residents as to the need for a greater than 5% increase. And if I'm misunderstanding that, please let me know. But I guess as I was considering that advice, I thought it had seemed probably appropriate in this year to stick with the max 5% increase and then look at a bigger increase for next year. And then also having sort of the economic uncertainty and you know, prospect of shutoffs for certain Westland residents also in mind as we're talking about an increase in this year.
Okay.
And to that point, I think the UAB is sort of as a luxury of looking at the technical merits and you look at your charter rates and making a recommendation to council based on need. In some respects, the UAB can look beyond the political and the communication and those efforts and just focus on the technical merits, I think. Obviously, when it gets to the council level, the council will take the UAB recommendation, make their own determination on what they see is appropriate in the upcoming budget. Typically, that's done as part of the budget process. The budget committee is often involved in that to some degree as well. And of course, that's all based on the UAB recommendation. And then when you get into something above a 5% rate increase, that's really where it then flips to staff, administrative personnel, and communications personnel. You don't want an engineer trying to win the hearts and minds of a political situation. We're just too objective, and so you need other folks involved to really talk about need and really getting at the issues that may be prevalent at the time of the vote. So, it gets a lot more complicated really fast when you talk about going out to vote. And then it gets complicated even more on when you go out to vote. Do you go out to vote in a significant election cycle, like a November election, like this November for president? Or do you go out in an off-peak election cycle, like in the spring? That's where you're typically getting into polling and polling efforts and the cost associated with that. So, when people don't realize, I think, sometimes how expensive it is to vote. and it takes a lot of effort to pay and cover that cost. And that's really beyond the UAB's main focus. I think it's really, at that point, it becomes the council's focus on, making that commitment above 5%.
And then just a question, too, as a practical matter, would we have missed any deadlines for getting that on a ballot for this year?
Definitely for this year. I think if we were looking at those rates, I think if you're really looking at doing something above 5%, you're probably going to look at it in the following years and not necessarily immediately next year, just because of the time it takes to get to the voters and then get it approved and get it as part of the our standard fee schedule. And so you're probably more practically looking at 1 year further than what we're showing in those in that one particular spreadsheet. That spreadsheet was just put together as sort of an example, if you will, of how rate increases could impact being able to do more.
Right, and with that being said, we are coming into a budget year this spring, so 2021. We will be setting a budget this spring. It definitely will be discussed at the table for budget discussions where water rates are. I think if the UAB says, hey, we think that eventually we want to go more than 5%, then we can discuss that during the budget discussions and kind of come up with a plan for when that might be. It probably won't happen in the spring, based off of what Lance is saying too, that it just seems like a quick turnaround. But maybe that could be something that is voted on next November or then that following May, for the following year, so fiscal year 22, or fiscal year 23, I'm sorry, fiscal year 23.
So essentially, if we make a recommendation now, it's kind of getting ahead of the game a little bit and giving City Council a chance to really focus on that moving forward. And pretty much we're just conceding that, it's going to be a 5% come January 1. And then, but moving forward, at least it's on the table and they know that that's our recommendation. situation. So we're not looking at, you know, we're not too late in the game, but we're, you know, we're early enough that we can see some progress before, you know, things start failing and getting really expensive and we're out of money.
Right.
Okay, Richard.
Yeah, so I wanted to add some perspective from a council point of view. I think the biggest obstacle to getting the public to accept, you know, rate increases above 5%, you know, I know a lot of people that have been complaining. I've been on council 4 years, and every year when they get the 5% increase, they complain. But primarily because they don't understand what they're paying for and why we need the increase, and that 5% is not a huge amount considering low cost water. We have an incredibly great South Fork Water Board. It's a wonderful organization. They run at zero debt, but they have expenses. And like Lance and Lauren are pointing out, you know, we can't go forever. You know, we need new pipes, etc. And the public doesn't understand that. I think the biggest thing that could be started earlier is to educate the public to things like, okay, we've got X amount of miles, like Lance said, 119 miles. Every year we need to replace or improve 10 miles, 15, whatever the number is. It costs us this much every year to do that. What kind of infrastructure do we want? You know, if we hit a major earthquake or some other event that can cause a problem, do we want the best infrastructure possible? Do you want water? So I think our voters are equipped. Expectations are set, you know, over a time where we could do, you know, kind of a campaign to for people to understand, and then it also makes it easier for council to help, like Lance put it, from the political point of view, as to how the city, you know, all the residents, how we're all going to benefit from that. And so showing the low cost of our water rates comparatively, you know, one of the things that a lot of our people in our city don't understand, Westland is not a rich city. We do not have lots of money to do things like improve pipes and stuff like that, infrastructure. We're fortunate that we passed the bond 2 years ago for $20 million of capital improvements. That's one aspect, but otherwise we don't typically have a lot of money. We have the lowest, you know, property tax rates in the area, and we can't affect that. So there's not a lot of income that comes into the city, as Laura reminds us, you know, pretty regularly, and we understand it. So we look for different forms of income and for things like water, which is essential, and quality of water we get. I think the public would accept increases, but only with if we educate them and make it, you know, over a period of time. And so it's generally best to do these kinds of, if it's necessary, ballots in November, because that's the least expensive to the city. There's usually no extra cost when there's other elections going on. If we did a special, it would be somewhat expensive, could be $20,000-$30,000, you know, to do it in potentially in May when there's not much going on. So, and I would think a year would be a good amount of time to be able to educate the public and to be able to show them and to get kind of buy-in ahead of time. I think it would be successful. And, you know, I personally don't know. I'm a person that likes to look at, you know, the data, and, you know, Lance and Amy and Lauren, they have all this data where they could show the impact of, if we don't do this, this is what the impact could be long term, you know. And, you know, Lance put the looking at the I-205 improvements, you know, that's $10 million, or yeah, about $10 million over 10 years. By the time we get to it, it's probably going to be more than that. You know, it's at some point. So, you know, to long story short, I think if the board chooses to want to do this, education is a key to making it simple for the public, or make it more understandable and acceptable from the public, where they would want to vote yes, because who doesn't want good infrastructure? I don't want to sit here without water because my pipes break in the neighborhood. I don't think anybody would want that. So that's a perspective.
Thanks, John. The last word.
Ed, go ahead.
Yeah, just piggyback on what Richard said. The one thing that this committee over the years was able to do after a while is to get the public educated to a certain point, that it's not just the water because at bay, at least for a while, people don't understand that that 5% does include an awful lot of things, besides just the water that just comes out of this. And for a while there, we did pretty well. As a matter of fact, we had an exhibit one time. We showed pieces of pipe that had rotten and a couple other things, which our people were handling within the 5%, if you will. You know, this project here, that street there. And it's important that it worked for a while, and we need more of that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Eric. Does anybody else have anything else to add here? Okay, so we have another item on the agenda, and that's the capital project update. So who's going to do the capital project update?
I can take the lead on that.
Amy?
Yes, that's Amy.
Okay.
For waterline projects, we recently completed phase one of our water program, and we replaced about a quarter of a mile of water lines along Cantera Way and Robin's Circle. We're currently working on phase two, which will go to bid soon in the next couple months, with construction in 2021. And that's for about two-thirds of a mile of new line along Spring Crest. The Spring Crest Condo Association has a substandard water system. Merrillhurst Circle, that's a substandard water line there before we do road improvements next summer. And then Hillcrest is our next phase. Additionally, we're working on the Highway 43 waterline replacement project. We just got 50% design on that. Lauren was mentioning that it looks like our water fund is flush, but the cost estimate at 50% design for that project is $1.9 million. So when you have $3 million in the bank and you're going to spend almost two of it on one project, there's just not a lot of money going around. And then you're probably aware of the Willamette Falls Drive project. That one's drawing to a conclusion, at least a lot of the contractors' work. They'll be paving this week into the weekend. Friday night they'll be doing some paving. With weather this week, they've had some delays, so they may have a little bit of paving on Monday, but that project is drawing to a close. We have a pump station that's under design and some arterial road projects, so we have a lot of other capital projects other than the water system. And Lance is free to add anything he would like. The Highway 43 project, we're hoping to go to bid in the spring with construction to follow with that project, the waterline improvements being complete in front of any construction along Highway 43. And that's just from Cedar Oak to Arbor Drive near the Lake Oswego border. So it's not the full length of Highway 43, it's just that phase one of Highway 43 improvements. That was quick, but I know we're after time, so.
Yes, okay. Thank you. Anybody have any questions before we go out here? Okay, the last part was discussing this first virtual meeting. Any recommendations, suggestions, anything anybody want to say about this? What we've done tonight?
I think it worked really well.
Okay, that's a positive note. Thank you. Okay, anyone else? Okay, so then our next meeting is scheduled for November 10th, 1 week after the election day. So I'm just going to throw a question out to Amy or whoever. I guess Amy would be the person. Is there any chance of having a face-to-face meeting, social distancing? And that's completely out of the question. Or is that Amy?
I think the latest guidance is until we get out of phase one or the metrics for phase one for the county change. I think we won't be meeting in person. It's really difficult to meet in person for the work that we do day to day, even on construction sites. I think it will be even more difficult as we go into the winter season and can't meet outside. Ideally, that would be how we would meet, would be outside, socially distanced. But I think with the wet season coming, I don't think it's a reality until we get out of phase one.
Okay.
So, John?
Yes.
One last comment. I want to compliment you. I think for your first virtual meeting, I think you folks have done a great job, like you've been doing them for months. So I'm in, you know, 3 or 4 meetings a week, you know, and you did a great job. Good team.
Okay, well, I had difficulty seeing the spreadsheets and all that stuff, so I was a little flabbergasted with that. But does anybody else have anything else to add? Does anybody have a motion to close the meeting, adjourn the meeting?
This is Jocelyn. I so move.
Is there a second?
I second.
Who is that?
Anthony.
Anthony. Okay. Okay, it's been moved and seconded to adjourn the meeting, and we will see you on November the 10th, okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Bye.